2022.
Ooh, it's taken some time. Hang on. We are recording, Dr. Cornwell.
Okay, thank you. Welcome back. Let's move to item 4A2, case number 19-30, Ashley Ramirez or Phillips.
Ms. Ramirez, are you present?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go ahead and introduce the board member staff.
Public member, Mr. Greer.
Yes, sir. Sorry.
Thank you. Public member, Mr. Clinton.
Here.
Professional member, Dr. King.
Present.
Professional member, Ms. Remick.
Present.
Professional member, Dr. Cornwall.
Present.
Professional member, Ms. Hunter.
Present.
Customer service representative, Ms. Chappius.
Present.
Thank you. Licensing administrator, Ms. Crowley.
Present.
Administrative service officer, Ms. Cardoza.
Present.
Investigator, Ms. Richardson.
Present.
And assistant attorney general, Ms. Baskins.
Present.
Thank you. Ms. Ramirez, would you please introduce yourself? And if you have counsel with you, would you have them introduce themselves as well?
Yes, I'm Ashley Ramirez, I'm a physical therapist, and I do not have counsel with me.
Okay. All right. But I'm assuming that you're willing to answer questions if the board has any.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I have a script that I need to read. Okay. And then you'll have an opportunity to make an opening statement if you'd like. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board's statutes or rules has occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any or all of the following disciplinary action. One, issue a decree of censure. Two, place restrictions upon a licensee's practice. Three, issue a civil penalty of not more than $500. Four, issue other disciplinary action. Five, issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of continuing education as specified by the board. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious to warrant disciplinary action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board's statutes and rules, the board may dismiss the case. If the board finds that the violations warrant suspension or revocation of the license, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. First, let's go ahead and swear in all those who will be providing testimony. So, Ms. Ramirez, and who else?
Ms. Richardson.
Okay, Ms. Richardson?
Yes.
All right, if you both have your right hands raised, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Ms. Ramirez?
Yes.
Ms. Richardson?
I do.
Okay. So, Ms. Ramirez, you have an opportunity to make an opening statement. You don't need to, but you're welcome to.
I don't have an opening statement.
Okay. So, does anybody on the board have questions for Ms. Ramirez?
Hi, it's Kelly King. Ashley, can you tell us what the time frame was that you worked at Summit?
Yes. Let me think. Sorry, give me just a minute. It was, I believe, November of 2017 to about August of 2019.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Ramirez, this is Peggy Hunter. I'm wondering, in the investigative report, several things, but there were several times when the PTA documented that the patient had fallen, yet in the opinion of the PTA, there was no injuries. It would seem, being a PT, that you would then have to reevaluate that patient. Can you explain why you did not?
Correct. So to my knowledge, and looking over, reviewing the documentation, I only recall that there was one fall that occurred possibly during the time that I was the next PT to see the patient. Actually, if I look at my records correctly, I don't see that there was a fall that happened while I was there. I know that there was one that happened while I was on vacation, and there was another supervising PT. And then I believe there was another one that occurred after I was working at another facility, and I was not there as well. Just in looking back at my records, if there's something that I missed, then feel free to point it out to me.
I'm just reading in the investigative report that you stated in your written response, it was reported by the PTA that Ms. N reported several falls that did not appear to result in injuries as documented by the PTA. And maybe I am incorrect, I assume that you were the supervising PT at that time.
So from what I recall of that conversation, or what maybe I had meant by it, is just in kind of reviewing over the entire case that there appeared to be a few falls and that there did not appear to be any major injuries. So just kind of speaking in general as far as when I reviewed the entire case. But I have noted in my notes that, you know, that a fall occurred on 6/12, or was reported on 6/12. I don't know that it occurred on 6/12. It was reported on 6/12 by the PTA in the note, and I was not present at that time. There was another supervising PT at that time. I also have one listed for 10/4/18, where, again, I was not working at the facility at that time. So I don't know if there were, I don't have any others listed that I can see in my notes.
Okay, thank you.
This is Mindy. I'll draw your attention to treatment visit number 2 on 4/12/18.
Okay.
Signed by Ralph Morales, PTA. Co-signed Ashley Phillips. Patient reports she fell in her apartment the other day but did not get hurt. She had to call security to help get her up.
Okay, sorry, I missed that one.
So thank you, Mindy. So since you were the supervising PT, mm-hmm. You know, people fall and say, "I'm not hurt," or whatever. They can hit their head and get swelling. don't you think you should have reevaluated the patient?
Yeah, so and I can't speak to specifically, you know, I don't have the notes that reflect, you know, what occurred directly after that. I would assume that, you know, I would have, you know, made sure that the patient didn't present with any new injuries. She lives in a, you know, an assisted living facility or independent living facility where they have security and EMTs that and a health clinic. You know, I would, if nothing presented itself to me, I just can't speak to that. I documented that there was any specific injury.
So the investigator has identified quite a few documentation deficiencies. There doesn't seem to be, in some cases, a clinical rationale why exercises, etc., were performed. Can you speak to that, please?
Yeah, I think that this situation definitely has been a very eye-opening situation and made me, you know, I feel like I'm always, you know, wondering what can be better about my documentation. And I think that this has definitely pointed a lot of things out to me that, you know, I was probably deficient in my documentation, and I will definitely, you know, take ownership of that, and definitely something that I have learned from, and kind of just seeing where the connections need to be made or over, you know, explained, and that it's not necessarily something that can be, you know, inferred based on objective, you know, objective findings.
This is Dr. Cornwell. Are you saying that you did things but didn't document them, or they didn't get done at all?
Well, in response to, I mean, if there's a specific scenario, maybe I can address that a little bit more specifically, but I, you know, based on the previous question about like a lack of like explanation for why certain exercises were performed or things like that, or rationale for why certain exercises were performed, I think that's what I'm referring to, in that, you know, the need for me to be more specific and detailed in every note, and not, you know, assuming that, you know, everything will carry over, or if it was mentioned previously that, you know, my different rationales for doing things, and that it needs to be more detailed and addressed every visit.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about patient PS. There's a note on 7/9/18, visit number 6. Manual stretching, left glenohumeral mobilizations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Did you provide those that intervention, or was that the PTA?
I believe it was the PTA.
Did you speak with the PTA that day about plan of care for PS?
We would speak on a daily basis. I did not instruct him to perform glenohumeral mobilizations, nor do I recall that he ever brought that to my attention or asked me if that was okay to perform on her.
Did you have a conversation with the PTA after this visit when you found out, because you co-signed the note, so you must have found out about it at least after the fact. Did you have a conversation with the PTA at that point?
So unfortunately, I do not believe that it was brought to my attention until maybe maybe a few visits later. The thing with our documentation system and co-signing the notes, which I was not initially aware of, but the system has our electronic signature, and when the PTA goes to start a note, they click on a person, a PT, as their supervising PT, and that signature automatically gets generated onto their note. So I know that there were several instances where, like, I was out of town or I was not at the facility and the PTA was clicking my name as the supervising PT, which should not have been happening because I was not there. I was not the supervising PT. So that's just to kind of explain how my signature ends up on those notes.
So how often would you see these patients? Because for PS, yes, he did it on, the PTA did it on 7/9/18, but he also did it on 7/11, 7/16, 7/18, 8/22, 8/24. At what point did you find out that he was doing mobilizations and you didn't agree to that?
So I started working at, I left that facility and started working full time at another facility beginning August 1st. I don't know if I even saw her before I left, before the switch happened.
For PS, you did not see PS after 7/9/18 because you were gone by 8/1, right?
Yeah, I cannot be sure without looking at the records to see if I did see her or did not see her before I left the facility on 8/1.
This is Mindy. Direct the board's attention to page number 9 at the bottom, 7/16/18, progress note and treatment visit number 8, signed by Ashley Phillips. And it followed two sessions, 7/9/18 and 7/11/18, both co-signed by Ms. Phillips, where Mr. Martin performed glenohumeral mobilizations. So she performed a progress note or did a reassessment on 7/16 following those two visits.
Okay.
Okay.
That kind of brings up another question, is that was PS getting better? Because you did a note, let's see, on 6/25, visit number 2, and then again on a progress note on 7/16. Was patient PS getting better?
I'm so sorry. I don't have the notes here with me, and I don't want to speak to something that I don't, without my documentation in front of me. I don't want to, contradict something that I wrote down on paper, because obviously that's, what was occurring at the time. So I would just have to default to what was put in my documentation.
Ms. Phillips, go ahead, Dr. Coral.
Your previous notes when you do your progress note.
Excuse me?
How thorough do you look at the past notes when you write your progress notes?
I would say it typically depends on how often I'm seeing the patient. If it's somebody that I'm continuously seeing or seeing periodically, then I typically feel like I have a good idea of their progress. But I am looking at, the documentation, to the best, of my ability to, review what the PTA has noted as far as progress and things like that. And I'm not sure if this was just, an instance of something I missed as far as the treatment that he was performing. I can't recall specifically. I know that there were a couple conversations that I did have with this PTA regarding his treatment and sticking to the plan of care. My thought is that I would have had this, I would have had this conversation with him because I did have several conversations with him about sticking to the plan of care and only performing, exercises that were justified by the, evaluation and the objective findings.
That sounds okay, but I don't see that reflected in the notes. I mean, your progress note of 716, it looks like you changed parts of the plan of care, but you didn't do any reevaluation to justify those changes. And the goals were unchanged from the initial evaluation. And the very next visit, 2 days later, the PTA is back doing glenohumeral mobilization. So I can't find any direct evidence that you clearly, regularly met with the PTA, that you knew what the PTA was doing with your patient, that you reevaluated the patient periodically to make sure everything was set. I'm having a trouble because it's not, I can't find it in your notes.
Yeah, I understand that. And again, I feel like this is, the same as far as, my justification for treatment, also my communication with, my physical therapy assistant and things like that being documented, I feel like is definitely something that was lacking in my documentation and something that was definitely brought to my attention with all of this, conversations that we would have on a daily basis. And, whether that patient, I was going to see that patient, that day or the next day or 2 days later, obviously I needed to document that, a conversation took place with the PTA, because we saw each other every day. For the most part, we had, conversation either face-to-face or via phone.
But you didn't, it appears that you didn't know, even though you had that regular conversation, you did not know that this PTA was doing mobilizations to the shoulder.
Right. I would have obviously not allowed that had a conversation with him if I did know about it.
Thorough were your conversations with the PTA? Were they very cursory, or did you sit down and go through each patient?
On a daily basis, I don't think that we went through every single patient. I believe at that time, we were having either weekly or biweekly case conference meetings with all staff and going through every single patient. But on a daily basis, I don't believe that we were discussing, each patient every single day.
Okay.
This is Peggy Hunter. Who determines if a patient is suitable for assistive personnel to treat?
The physical therapist for the most part.
Okay, you mentioned that you had several conversations with the PTA about following the plan of care. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so I'm looking at a treatment that I'm a PTA. I don't think I could have treated this patient because nothing is assessed by you. Passive range of motion of the cervical spine is documented as a treatment intervention when it was not assessed. And the list goes on and on and on. Can you address that, please?
What was not assessed?
Yes. I don't know where the clinical rationale for doing these things are because it wasn't assessed.
Which things specifically?
Okay, you have, let me see, treatment 7 to 18, visit 4, patient PS. The investigative report shows manual therapy, soft tissue massage, traction to the cervical spine is documented when palpation and segmental movements of the cervical spine were not assessed. Resisted rows and shoulder extension is documented when strength of shoulder extension was not assessed. Passive range of motion of the cervical spine is documented as a treatment intervention when it was not assessed. Still having numbness and tingling in the lower extremities, assessment of sensation of the lower extremity is not documented. So I'm confused.
Peggy, I'm going to correct you. That was the upper extremity.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yes, lower upper extremity when it's not assessed. So I don't know how this you or the PTA could treat this patient.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I think that probably part of some confusion in my documentation, again, which has been pointed out to me with all of this, is that I think a lot of times, I mean, as a clinician, I'm just constantly assessing. So, and I'm not always, I guess I'm not, I was not in this case documenting specifically what I was finding as I'm, you know, obviously when I'm doing soft tissue, you know, I'm palpating. And then I think just addressing that in my documentation and writing, you know, and noting the objective findings followed by the treatment, you know, same thing with, you know, passive range of motion. As I'm performing this passive range of motion, I'm assessing it objectively. But again, it appears that it was lacking. The objective finding was lacking in my documentation.
I understand. You know, I'm a PTA. If I had to pick up this note and go treat this patient, it almost looks like the PTA just did what they thought because they weren't getting any direction from you.
Mm-hmm.
That's not correct.
Correct.
All right. Thank you, ma'am.
Hi, Ashley. This is Nushka Remick, PT.
Hi.
I'm wondering, can you distinguish for me if there is one, the difference between not being in the facility and not being the supervising physical therapist?
So it would be, if I was supervising the PTA, I would be supervising them under indirect supervision if I was not in the facility, as opposed to being at the facility, I would be supervising them under direct supervision.
Because there's some instances where you suggested that you were not in the facility, and I wasn't sure, even though you were not in the facility, could you still be the supervising PT?
So this is something that I had brought up with my supervisor, is that there was a PT there that took my place. And my understanding is that when I left, that I was going down to supervise another PTA at another facility that I was working at full time. And I was not asked to indirectly supervise any PTAs at that time. And this was something that I brought up with my supervisor, that, that the PTAs can't be using me as a supervising PT without my permission or knowledge.
Okay, so my understanding you to say that it's sort of facility policy that essentially the supervising PT would change based on who is in the building on a semi-regular or daily basis, not who initiated the eval or reeval or subsequent plan.
Yeah, that was my understanding. And because I was no longer working at that facility, they found someone to take my place.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question. This is Mike Clinton. You indicated to Ms. Hunter that for the most part, the PT delegated to assisted personnel. Can you clarify what you meant by for the most part? Was there other people that would assign duties to assisted personnel?
No, not duties. I didn't mean that. I don't do the scheduling, we didn't do our own scheduling. I would, if there was a patient that, I did not feel was appropriate to be seen by the PTA, then I would let scheduling know that they were going to only be on my schedule.
So it was only you, as the PT, making that decision?
That if the patient was appropriate for a PTA or not?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, it's Dr. King. What area of PT practice are you practicing in now?
I work in home health now.
And do you have any PTAs that you supervise in that role?
I have one that I supervise.
Thank you. It's Kelly King again. Just just a couple of more questions. So in your current role with your PTA that you supervise, how frequently do you talk about the patients that the PTA will be seeing?
We talk usually every day that she is going to see the, you know, whatever particular patients she's seeing that are mine. We have a conversation about, you know, how they're doing, what their plan is, what are things that we're working on. It's also documented, you know, I document plan for next visit. So it's also in the documentation, but, you know, typically she will send me an email saying, you know, this is who I'm seeing, or this is who I saw, this is what we did, this is how it went.
How frequently do you review her documentation?
So I typically will review it every third visit, or every fourth visit I go to see the patient, unless other things are being brought to my attention, but I'll go back and review the notes from the previous treatments.
And just to clarify, do you talk with the PTA every day about every patient that they will be seeing that you are the supervising PT for?
So in usually in one way or another, whether it's email, secure text message, or through our documentation, we're talking about every patient
that
she will see that day that are mine.
And how is she assigned those patients? Do you delegate them to her, or does she just have a list and that's when you talk or text?
I delegate them to her.
Okay, thank you.
So prior to being the supervising PT for this PTA, did you ever actually see her work with your patients?
Yes, I did shadow her.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
This is Dr. Cornwell again. Can you kind of tell us how your documentation has changed since this complaint was brought to your attention?
Yes, I think that documentation now is something that stresses me out on a daily basis because of this, you know, because of the situation and obviously wanting to prevent this from ever happening again. It's something that, like I said, it stresses me on a daily basis, which is probably a good thing to make sure that, you know, I'm doing everything correctly. My plan is to take a documentation course. I would love a recommendation if they're, you know, on a good course. But my full intention is to take a documentation course because it's been something, you know, that I've questioned for a while. So, but now I think for me that, you know, the biggest takeaway that, you know, I feel like for me is that A, documenting my conversations, you know, or documenting, you know, my conversations or my communication with, you know, my PTA or other staff members on the team. And then also, you know, making sure that my interventions tie directly to my goals and documenting that, not only, you know, just letting it out, you know, putting it out there and assuming that people can make the connection that this treatment will will lead to, you know, improvement on this, you know, but trying to be specific in making that connection.
Does that, anyone else have questions for Ms. Ramirez? All right, appears that nobody else has any more questions. So we will conclude this this part of the hearing. And would you like to make a statement, a closing statement?
No, I don't have a closing statement.
Okay, so we're going to deliberate in here in open session, but this is your last opportunity to provide us any additional information that you want us to know about.
Okay, I'm okay. Thank you.
All right. Okay. So, what are the members of the board feeling at the moment? What are your thoughts?
Just a few points that have come up for me and just in some of the note taking. One, you know, she worked there for 2 years. And I think that longevity and the practice of how they did things in this setting is concerning. You made a comment, Dr. Carmel. I am in agreement with one of the comments that you made. It does not appear that she truly had any idea what was happening with her patients when the PTA was seeing them. Active delegation of the patients to a PTA with clear instructions and then follow up and follow through, I think is pretty significantly lacking in a lot of the, in her testimony, as well as in the gaps in documentation.
I'm still trying to figure out whether or not she did things but didn't document, or she didn't do them. And that one's still kind of problematic for me, although I think given the patient population she worked with, I don't understand why she would not do some basic documentation about medical history, cardiovascular status, functional status, things like that. So given that, I'm inclined that she didn't do them, mm-hmm. and that's why they weren't documented.
Yeah.
This is Peggy. Just because of her documentation without assessing things and not having a clinical rationale for what she's doing, I also think it lent to the PTA just being able to do whatever they want, which isn't correct. It's any PTs I've ever worked with, we've had a pretty in-depth conversation about what to do and et cetera, which doesn't seem to have happened here, which puts patient safety, I believe, in jeopardy. So, the documentation is not good. And I think when a patient falls, it's not up to the patient or the PTA to say, oh, well, they're not hurt. So. That because a lot of times patients fall, as we've seen in the past, and they've hit their head or they hit their hip and it's broken or whatever, and they don't know. So it's very not good.
Peggy, along the same lines, you know, I am troubled with the sometimes we talk about some of the patients, you know, just recognizing even in her, what she stated in her current practice, that it's just not clear that there's a good understanding of what's being delegated to the PTAs and her ownership of the patient's care, regardless of who is treating that patient. You know, getting an email at the end of the day about how the patient did and what they did, that's not delegation.
It is not. And I guess I've, just because of how I've always been treated with my supervising PT, we work as a team. And, you know, even if it's something basic I would like to do to the patient, I just don't do it. I go back to the PT and say, I would like to do this. What do you think? And then I get their permission. I just don't go off and start doing things without that. And it doesn't appear that this has ever happened.
Any other comments? Let me present a motion relative to findings of fact. And so I move that we adopt the findings of fact as outlined in the investigative report, minus the ARS 32-2044. No, I got the wrong one again. Oh, I was right to begin with. R4-24-304A2, electronic signature. I think it's very similar to the previous case where I think the company was doing things unbeknownst to the therapist. But I would say to adopt the rest of them.
I'll second that.
So we have a motion. We have a second. Questions or discussions about that?
Okay, so before you for complaint 1930, findings of fact, accept all of the findings of fact as indicated in the informal hearing brief with the exception of R4-24-304A2. Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Ms. Hunter?
Yes.
Motion passes. You're on to conclusions of law. We need a motion for conclusions of law.
So I make a motion to approve the statute violations which are listed. Do you want me to go through them, Ms. Donahue?
I can do that for you. It'd be ARS 32-2041, ARS 32-2044, I'm sorry, 2044-4 and 1, ARS 32-2044-6, ARS 32-2044-13, ARS 32-2044-20, and
ARS 32-2044-22. Correct. Not the last one, as we've already established.
Correct. Is there a second?
Second.
Yeah. Okay. Discussion on the current motion to adopt those statutes rules as a law.
Hearing none on the conclusion of law as identified, Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Ms. Hunter?
Yes.
You are now at your board order.
Um, I've been trying to think about what would be the best way to help Ms. Ramirez become a better physical therapist and the physical therapist that she probably always wanted to be. In that regard, I would move that we have a board order of continuing education. One is 6 hours of documentation, at least 3 hours of supervision, and 6 hours of geriatrics. And to also require her to complete the jurisprudence exam and pass it. 1 year probation, but possibility to terminate that early if everything's completed. She can take things online if necessary, approval by the staff.
Dr. Cornwall, do you think a chart review would be in order after the documentation course?
It might. I'm willing to kind of entertain that. That's not, I wasn't thinking that, but if others have a good rationale for why, I guess she's moved on. And so I guess your point is that we don't really know what her documentation's like right now.
Correct.
To a certain extent, she's in a more precarious setting because although I don't think she had a whole lot of supervision, direction, mentoring at the previous place, but she's now got even less being home health.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So I will accept the monitoring, the chart review.
Just a chart review.
Would that be for 3 records?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
And to be completed after she's completed the documentation course.
Of course, yes.
The standard is 60 days after completion of the documentation course.
Sounds good. I'm not sure we have a formal second, though.
Second.
Okay. We're in discussion?
Yes.
Comments, concerns. You ready to call the question?
The motion before you is for a disciplinary board order for complaint 1930, Ms. Ashley Ramirez, PT, for 6 hours of documentation, 3 hours of supervision, 6 hours of geriatrics, passage of the AZ log exam, 3 chart reviews, to be completed with 1 year early termination available and online course taking available. Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Ms. Hunter?
Yes.
Motion passes.
All right, we've got one more informal. Everybody okay?
If we could pause just to stop the recording for 1 minute.
All right.